Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading articles from the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper. These stories are for the week of Sunday, October 16th, 2022. I'll also, to fill time, read select articles from a local San Angelo news organization called San Angelo Live. Plaque being placed in honor of Uzziah Garcia at San Angelo Kids Kingdom by Rosanna Frere, published October 20th. A plaque will be placed in the San Angelo Kids Kingdom in honor of Uzziah Garcia, a San Angeloan who was killed in the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School. The 10-year-old was one of 21 victims of the mass shooting in Uvalde on May 24, 2022. Garcia was laid to rest in his hometown of San Angelo on June 25th. On Saturday, October 22nd at 10 a.m., a plaque unveiling will take place in front of Kids Kingdom at 290 West River Drive in honor of Garcia, according to Susanna Valenzuela with Discover San Angelo. The plaque and a bench were donated by Kona Ice. Sergio Garcia, Uzi's father, had fond memories of the spot, Valenzuela said. He and his children, including Uzi, when it would snow, would play in the snow and roll down the hill at the visitor center directly in front of the memorial plaque and bench. Angelo State celebrates homecoming week with parade, football game, and more. By Rosanna Frere, published October 19th. Angelo State University's 2022 homecoming events and activities run throughout the week, ending on Saturday, October 22nd, with a football game between the Rams and Texas A&M Kingsville. During the Alumni Association homecoming dinner and awards event, 8 notable alumni, faculty, staff, and honorary alumni will be honored, according to a news release. The most prestigious recognition will go to 2022 distinguished alumnus Tamir Khan, class of 1991, senior vice president of international business development and strategy for Salesforce, a pioneering Fortune 500 cloud-based software design company. Homecoming 2022 events are a collaborative effort of ASU's Office of Student Life, Alumni Association, Office of Communications and Marketing, Athletics Department, and numerous student organizations, the release stated. This year's theme is ASU's Haunted Homecoming, and many of the events are open to the public. Here's the schedule of events. Friday, October 21st, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m., Dance Marathon, an annual event to raise money for the Children's Miracle Network at Shannon Hospital. It will take place outdoors at the ASU Pavilion. 6 p.m., Alumni Association Homecoming Dinner and Awards, an evening to celebrate the 2022 Homecoming honorees. It begins with the social gathering at 6 p.m., followed by dinner at 6:30 p.m. in the Houston Hart University Center. Tickets are available from the Alumni Association for $75 per person for members and $100 each for non-members. 9 p.m., pep rally and bonfire in the open area behind Foster Field at First Community Credit Union Stadium, 1600 University Avenue. 10:30 p.m., Midnight Madness, the first Rams and Bells basketball practice of the season in the Janelle Center Stevens Arena. Activities include Meet the Team, contests, and giveaways. Saturday, October 22nd, 10 a.m., ASU Homecoming Parade begins at the Myers Softball Complex and then winds through the ASU campus to end at the Janelle Center. 1 p.m., Rambell's Soccer versus Texas Woman's University, also the Senior Day Game at ASU Soccer Field. 2 p.m., Bell's Volleyball versus Texas A&M International, a conference match at the Janelle Center Stevens Arena. 3 to 5 p.m., Alumni Association Ram Jam. Tailgate party includes free food, games, live music, and more at the LeGrand Alumni and Visitor Center. 6 p.m., homecoming football game. The ASU Rams take on the Texas A&M Kingsville Javelinas at LeGrand Stadium at First Community Credit Union Field. The homecoming king and queen will be crowned at halftime. San Angelo VA Clinic getting new name to honor late Powell couple. From staff reports published October 19th. The VA Clinic in San Angelo soon will have a new name. On Wednesday, the office of U.S. Representative August Pfluger, who represents the 11th Congressional District that includes Tom Green County, announced that the outpatient clinic here will be named for the late Colonel Charles and Joanne Powell. The Colonel Charles and Joanne Powell VA Clinic Act was authored by Pfluger and U.S. Senator John Cornyn. Charles Powell was a Texas native who served for 30 years in the U.S. Air Force. He volunteered as a rescue crew commander during the Vietnam War, flying 168 combat missions. He later served as the commander of the 17th Training Wing at Goodfellow Air Force Base. He died July 2, 2020, and his wife died March 24, 2021. They were married for 65 years. Charles Powell and Joanne dedicated their lives to serving our country, Pfluger said in a statement. The impact they made on San Angelo, Goodfellow Air Force Base, and our entire military community cannot be overstated. Their unparalleled patriotism and service made the Concho Valley a better place. I am extremely proud that now every veteran who walks in for care at the clinic will be inspired by the service of Colonel Charles and Joanne Powell. Added Cornyn, the work done by Colonel Charles and Joanne Powell spanned decades and impacted thousands of West Texans. I'm grateful to Congressman Pfluger for joining me with this, and I can think of no recognition more fitting to the Powells and their supportive veterans than a VA clinic named in their honor. Joanne Powell served as a congressional district office manager and regional staff aide to Congressmembers Tom Leffler, Lamar Smith, and Mike Conaway, who preceded Pfluger. She also served with Pfluger during her 35 years in that capacity. The couple served in volunteer capacities, with Charles Powell named Citizen of the Year by the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce. He similarly was honored by the Boy Scouts of Southwest Texas. Known as the First Lady of Goodfellow Air Force Base, Joanne Powell served the Red Cross, Meals for the Elderly, and Hospice of San Angelo. SAISD Board Hears Elementary Campus Closure Plan by Matthew McDaniel, special to the Standard Times, published October 18th. San Angelo Independent School Board trustees and district staff heard from the firm of Parkhill, Smith & Cooper regarding the recent facilities assessment report, which recommends closing three elementary campuses. According to the agenda packet information from the district, the report was commissioned in December of 2021 to examine Altaloma, Austin, Bel Air, Fannin, McGill, Reagan, and San Jacinto elementaries with regards to facility condition, educational and spatial adequacy, building age, capacity versus enrollment, operational costs, expandability options, and locations of special programs. According to excerpts from the report, campus infrastructure was rated for multiple considerations, including utilities, site improvements, ADA compliance, structural integrity, exterior facade, exterior windows, roofing, interior construction, interior finishes, plumbing, HVAC systems, electrical power, lighting, fire alarms, and educational adequacy. The results were then analyzed, arriving at an overall rating for each school campus based on the number of things needing immediate replacement or replacement in the next 5 years. Alan Wolf, PE, went over some of the main points from the study. At our last meeting, we discussed, for a number of reasons, our recommendation that the district look at moving from 17 elementary campuses to 14, and then continue to reduce campuses and further balance enrollment to something close to the 500 to 650 student range, Wolf said. Throughout the process, we have endeavored, and your staff has been so good about keeping us focused on service to the student. That is something we've heard repeated over and over to us, whether it's from your administrative team or your facilities team or the principals. It's been all about the kids. It's been all about serving the students. Wolf told the board that the overall trend statewide has been toward larger sized campuses, typically with enrollments between 500 to 800 students, pointing out that most of the San Angelo elementaries have enrollments between 270 to 350. Wolf showed a state map highlighting cities where elementary consolidations have taken place, which included Abilene, Austin, Big Spring, Borger, Killeen, Lubbock, Plainview, and Snyder. One slide focused on Lubbock ISD's consolidation of three elementary schools into one site in 2021, which, according to Wolf, resulted in that district saving an estimated $1.8 million in operating expenses. According to Wolf, the larger campus model they envision would be creating a school within a school where makerspaces and other resources for students are brought together. Some time was spent on where the district will go from here, with the draft master plan showing one possible decision tree, which would cost around $20 million, according to architect R.J. Lopez, something that could be accomplished without a bond election. That plan calls for merging San Jacinto Elementary students to Reagan Elementary and using San Jacinto for pre-kindergarten and other purposes, while merging San Jacinto, Fannin, Alta Loma, and McGill Pre-K and Functional Needs students to San Jacinto as Phase 1, tentatively set to begin in 2023. Phase 1B, also set for 2023, would see Alta Loma merged with Fannin, and Alta Loma would then be repurposed or closed. Phase 2 would expand McGill to merge students from Austin Elementary in 2024. A series of town hall meetings are being planned to discuss the plan with the public as trustees and staff realize that many families have a long history with certain campuses recommended for closure. County Court at Law Judge Roberts marks retirement with reception. Published October 18th. Local officials will mark the retirement of County Court at Law Judge Penny Roberts during a reception in her courtroom from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. Thursday, October 20th. Judge Roberts grew up in San Angelo and is a graduate of the Baylor University School of Law. She began her career with Tom Green County in 1991, working in the district attorney's office, where she served until her appointment to the county court at law in October of 1995. Judge Roberts is expected to continue serving the courts in a limited capacity as one of the area's senior judges. On September 20th, Tom Green County Commissioner's Court appointed Andrew Graves to preside as Tom Green County Judge for Court at Law No. 2 for the duration of Roberts' unexpired term, which ends December 31st, 2022. Graves won the Republican Party contest for the position, earning a four-year term in March with the defeat of Leland Lacey by 125 votes. 01 Brewing Company opens beer garden in San Angelo, by Rosanna Frere, published October 15th. 01 Brewing Company has opened a beer garden in the former Witch Witch building in San Angelo. Eric Zobel is the owner of the brewing company, which was recently rebranded from 01 Ale House. Zobel's dream has been to open a casual taproom feel business for his beer that he has been brewing since 2014. His dream is now coming to life at 59 North Coingham, the former Witch Witch location, now known as 01 Taproom. Hannah Houghton, general manager at both 01 locations, said they are calling the new location a beer garden. "We want people to understand that it's a chill spot," Houghton said. "Some places are called tap rooms and also serve liquor, but here we just have a beer and wine license. We are a beer garden with a nice patio, great indoor space, and a relaxed environment." there's currently a cornhole game set up with picnic tables and other patio furniture. Houghton said it will be eventually completely landscaped to a backyard oasis with shades, trees, and more. The tap room will have 16 types of beer distributed from 01 Brewing. Some current taps include the seasonal Oktoberfest Eureka, which is a collaboration with the Bearded Barista using coffee beans, and many more. Houghton said the downtown restaurant at 20 West Beauregard Avenue will remain in operation. "Everyone wants to go there to eat and maybe get a drink," she said. "Some people don't even know we brew our own beer there." This new spot will still have some food, like sandwiches and soft pretzels. Houghton said they are still hiring for kitchen staff. "I don't want to call the position a line cook because that sounds difficult. It's really just putting things in the oven," she said. "It's no different than Witch or Subway, building the sandwich and toasting it. I also have a strong bartender group, but I'm always taking applications. We do prefer people who know craft beer or have an interest in it." Interested applicants can apply in person during business hours or message on the business's Facebook. The taproom had its grand opening Thursday, October 13th. They're now open 7 days a week from 3 to 9 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 3 p.m. to midnight on Friday, noon to midnight on Saturday, and noon to 9 p.m. on Sunday. Now we're moving over to some articles that were published online by SanAngeloLive.com. Jury finds Gonzalez guilty of manslaughter in the high-speed crash that killed three children, by Matt Trammell, published October 20th. A jury made up of mostly women took only a few hours to find Antonio Gonzalez guilty of causing the deaths of three local children in a high-speed crash in 2021. The last report San Angelo Live had Wednesday came as both sides rested their case. Final arguments were presented, during which the defense told the jury that Gonzalez could not be found guilty because he did not consciously try to run from the police that night. Assistant District Attorney Richard Villarreal argued that he can only say he didn't see the lights because Gonzalez was going over 80 miles per hour on South Bryant. Villarreal reminded the jury that the black box in the vehicle indicated the throttle was at 99% a second before the crash occurred. He finished by laying three photos of the children in front of the jury. "When this happened," he said, "a number of faces in the panel turned gloom. Reporters did see tears in some of their eyes." The charge was read and the jury began deliberation at around 12:45 p.m., They met for the majority of the afternoon, but eventually came out with a guilty verdict on all six counts. The court then moved on to the punishment phase. Then the jury will hear from both sides and then will determine Gonzalez's sentence. With the three counts of evading arrest causing death and three counts of manslaughter, Gonzalez could spend up to 120 years in the TDCJ prison system. It is likely, though, that the jury will make the counts run concurrently with a punishment range from 2 to 20 years. The court will resume on Friday morning at 8 a.m. Unlicensed driver injured in Santa Rita crash, by James Beligny, published October 18th. A lunchtime crash in a residential neighborhood sent one individual to the hospital. On Tuesday, October 18th, at about 12:40 p.m., San Angelo police and other first responders were called to the intersection of Austin Street and Avenue K regarding a major crash. Once on scene, a white Ford Expedition and a silver Mitsubishi Eclipse were in the roadway, and both had front-end damage. Officer Long with the San Angelo Police Department issued a statement saying that the white Ford Expedition was traveling westbound on Avenue K, and the silver Mitsubishi Eclipse was driving southbound on Austin Street. The Ford failed to yield the right-of-way from the stop sign, and the two vehicles crashed in the intersection. The driver of the Ford Expedition was cited for failing to yield the right-of-way from the stop sign. The driver of the Mitsubishi Eclipse was transported to the hospital with minor injuries and was cited for not having a driver's license. The roadway was dry at the time of the crash, and the weather was clear. Meals for the Elderly expands into Irion County, by Yantis Green, published October 20th. Meals for the Elderly announced Wednesday the nonprofit is expanding services to Irion County. Meals for the Elderly is a nonprofit organization that currently delivers lunchtime meals Monday through Friday to homebound seniors in Tom Green County, Concho County, and Miles. Starting on November 7th, Meals for the Elderly will be expanding services to include Irion County. Residents that qualify for services in that area are encouraged to complete an application at mealsfortheelderly.org or contact their offices at 325-655-9200 for more information. City Eyes Moving the Landfill, by Joe Hyde, published October 17th. City leaders want to move the San Angelo landfill from its current location at 3002 Old Ballinger Highway on San Angelo's northeast side. The landfill has been owned by the City of San Angelo since 1984, who hired Republic Services and two previous companies Republic bought out years ago to manage it. The old landfill has less than 10 years of life left as it is filling up, according to the schedule. Now, city officials are in the process of studying moving the location of the landfill to a city farm tract located near the Tom Green County Detention Facility. City Manager Daniel Valenzuela said it was too soon to publicly announce the plans and remained mum on the anticipated move. Mayor Brenda Gunter said the move should be considered because the landfill is approaching a critical milestone as all cells currently licensed by the TCEQ have only a few years of use. She views the real estate near the proposed Interstate 27 that is projected to follow a path slightly north of FM 2105 as an opportunity to attract more commercial business. The landfill, though, is not adjacent to FM 2015, is still in the way of her vision. The new landfill location will also benefit the city in road usage. Bell Street, undergoing its recent renovation, sits in the pathway of the existing landfill, and large trash trucks are tough on the pavement that city taxpayers are on the hook to fix. At the proposed and new location, trucks will traverse a county road and then feed on to Loop 306 Houston Heart Expressway. Neither roadway is maintained by the City Roads Department. Instead, the county and TxDOT will maintain the roads. Relocating the landfill is not without its challenges. The first is cost. As shown to us, the city is required by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, to study the soil at the proposed new landfill location, a siting and hydrogeological study. Studies like these are expensive, and the risk is spending a small fortune before failing to gain state of Texas approval for the new location. The cost of operating a landfill, once permitted, can run as much as $500,000 per acre, or in San Angelo's case, about $10 to $12 million. On the other hand, adding height to the existing landfill by licensing with the state for the capability to pile trash and dirt up 50 feet higher than the current permit allows may offer a 30 to 50 year life extension to the existing landfill at a reduced cost. Where there is risk, there is also conflict. Mayor Brenda Gunter has the appearance of a conflict of interest when considering moving the landfill. She owns 96.063 acres between the former Martifer Hirschfeld Windmill Manufacturing Facility and the Pawland Subdivision. The existing landfill sits just north of the Old Ballinger Highway, across and north from Hirschfeld's facility. Brenda Gunter's late husband, Ken, owned land all over the county, and Brenda has continued participating in some development projects – I asked her about those 96 acres. Ken and I had our last big argument over this property, Gunter recalled. The land was purchased in March 2009 from Max Jacobs Frontier Real Estate and is now owned by Gunter and Jacobs Holdings Company, LLC. Gunter recalled that at the time of the land purchase, Ken was thinking the Martifer-Hirschfeld joint venture would expand, thus making the land more valuable. Of course, we all know how that turned out, Gunter said with a tinge of sarcasm. Text messages detailing the Gunter land near the landfill have landed in the cell phones of fellow city council members, but Gunter is undeterred. The land was purchased in 2009, long before Gunter thought she'd consider running for mayor. That this is being used against me is another reason why I really hated this land deal, Gunter said. Gunter said her only motivation for considering the landfill move is for the city council to make the best decision in light of the proposed routing of the interstate. More valuable commercial and industrial property along the interstate fulfills Gunter's principal self-described mission. More planes, trains, and automobiles reduces the tax burden on residential property owners. The area north of the existing landfill along the interstate can usher in a golden age of Bucky's truck stops and freight haulers. What's more, there is already a rail port near there, too. The City of San Angelo trash collection contract went into effect August 1, 2014, after a lengthy battle with competitor Texas Disposal Systems, and is in effect for the life of the landfill. The contract states that Republic Services will pay for the closure and post-closure requirements, and this can be expensive. Republic will also be held liable for any issues that come up after the landfill is closed. Meanwhile, landfill closure means Republic will likely have to recompete for the contract to manage the new landfill. You can imagine Republic is against the idea. Permitting the landfill to a greater height that adds to the lifespan is therefore likely in Republic Services' best interest. Republic Representative Joseph Spano would not comment on the issue, but a detailed proposal to add lifespan onto the existing landfill by permitting it to a greater height has been delivered to the city. None of the city council members we talked to had seen the proposal, however. For now, the prospect of moving the landfill has not been mentioned publicly, but many who watch the city are talking about it. San Angelo police sergeant injured in car crash during arrest by James Belligny, published October 17th. A San Angelo police sergeant suffered injuries after being involved in a vehicle crash while attempting to stop a fleeing suspect early Monday morning. Information released by the San Angelo Police Department revealed that on October 17th, shortly after midnight, a San Angelo police patrol officer observed a white-in-color Ford Escape driving recklessly on Sherwood Way. The officer was able to catch up to the suspect vehicle and initiated a traffic stop on it in the 4900 block of Houston Hart frontage. The suspect initially stopped for the officer, but then fled the stop in their vehicle at a high rate of speed. A vehicle pursuit was initiated, and officers observed the vehicle enter into a parking lot of an apartment complex in the 2600 block of Southland Boulevard. The suspect vehicle was then able to turn around in the parking lot of the complex and then collided with the pursuing patrol unit. The collision caused extensive damage to both of the vehicles, and officers were then able to quickly take the suspect into custody. The suspect was identified as 36-year-old Crystal Robles, and she was taken into custody for reckless driving, driving while intoxicated, and evading arrest or detention with a motor vehicle. A 35-year-old passenger of Robles' vehicle was initially detained but was released at the conclusion of the initial investigation. Robles and her passenger were not injured during the course of this pursuit investigation. A sergeant with the San Angelo Police Department suffered minor injuries associated with the crash and was treated at Concho Valley ER and was released after treatment. everything we know about the future of San Angelo's former China Garden Restaurant by Matt Trammell, published October 17th. For weeks now, crews have been working on San Angelo's former China Garden Restaurant on the corner of College Hills and Loop 306. China Garden was forced to close in 2018 after the owner, Ai Xu Qing, was found guilty of filing false income tax reports to the IRS. In an article published in April of 2017 by San Angelo Live, we pulled finance reports. In those reports, it was found out that Qing underreported his income multiple times. He was forced to pay $1.7 million and spent the next 3 years in a federal prison. He was also the former owner of Bonsai Garden in San Angelo and Abilene. During his hiatus, the China Garden restaurant eventually closed. Now, two men with the same last name as Qing, Ryan and Ronald, are remodeling and opening again under the LLC Gogo Gogi. Gogo Gogi has requested a liquor license from the TABC for this location. Since renovations have begun, the outside of the building has been completely repainted and inside has been prepared for a totally new design. It is unclear at this time when they will open, but it appears that it will be an Asian cuisine restaurant. Rip Wheeler of Yellowstone buys a San Angelo company by Joe Hyde, published October 19th. The man who plays the character Rip Wheeler from Yellowstone is part of a group of investors who purchased a San Angelo coffee company. Cole Hauser plays the head man of the bunkhouse named Rip, who is also Beth Dutton's beau in the hit streaming series Yellowstone. The investment group purchased San Angelo's Longhorn Coffee Company. Longhorn Coffee Company is a small batch coffee roasting company founded in the early 2010s by Scott and Lori Decker. The couple was roasting small batches of coffee and eventually introduced their coffee blends at grocery stores such as Market Street. During the middle of the COVID pandemic, the couple expanded by establishing a consumer-facing coffee shop in an old gas station at 901 South Oak Street in San Angelo. Longhorn Coffee is known for its unique blends such as Snake Bite, Concho, and Pecos. Hauser is part of an investment group headed by Carl Pfluger, the brother of U.S. Congressman August Pfluger. Carl Pfluger is based in Midland and works in the oil and gas industry. No one will talk on the record, but we heard that Lori Decker said she and Scott sold their thriving coffee company for more money than I ever dreamed of. Longhorn Coffee Company was the third place winner of the San Angelo Business Plan Competition in 2017. The couple worked with ASU's Small Business Development Center business advisor, James Lavelle, who set them up for the company's final expansion prior to this acquisition. Odessa man arrested in San Angelo for lewd assault of a teen by Matt Trammell, published October 20th. An Ector County man was arrested Wednesday night for allegedly sexually assaulting a teenager in Tom Green County. According to court documents, on October 19th, Kevin Metaxas, 55 of Odessa, was arrested for a grand jury indictment for two counts of indecency with a child by sexual contact. The indictment alleges that Metaxas sexually assaulted a child under the age of 17 by touching her genitals in January 2006 and in January 2008 while in Tom Green County. The indictment was handed down by the grand jury in May 2020, and a warrant was issued for Metaxas' arrest on May 19, 2020. Metaxas' bond was set at $40,000. Angelo State University, Howard College, and SAISD team up to fix teacher shortage program by Matt Trammell, published October 20th. Angelo State University has entered into a partnership agreement with Howard College to offer the new Texas two-step teacher certification program, which is designed to help address the shortage of public school teachers in the region and the state. Building on ASU's legacy of graduating high-quality teachers, the Texas Two-Step program focuses on assisting paraprofessionals in public school districts reach their goal of becoming a classroom teacher. ASU is partnering with Howard College to provide paraprofessionals with the foundational coursework and intensive field experience to become classroom-ready teachers, with coursework delivered 100% online. The program involves two distinct steps: completion of 60 credit hours to earn an Associate of Arts in Teaching, AAT, degree from Howard College, followed by a seamless transition to ASU. Completion of the remaining 60 credit hours of coursework and field experiences to earn a Bachelor of Science, BS, in Interdisciplinary Studies, Early Childhood to Grade 6 Generalist, with Teaching Certification degree from ASU. Paraprofessionals who enter the Texas Two-Step program will maintain their employment within their school district while completing their Howard College and ASU curriculum online. This exciting partnership allows Angelo State and Howard College to play an active role in assisting Texas school districts to fill classrooms with certified teachers who are already invested in their community, said Dr. Scarlett Klaus, Dean of ASU's College of Education. Additional benefits for paraprofessionals in the Texas Two-Step program include transcript review and degree planning assistance, structured support and mentorship from their school district and ASU personnel, eligibility for financial aid through a variety of sources, specialized preparation for TEES teacher certification exams. For the Texas Two-Step program, paraprofessionals are aides, or educational aides, who work in schools alongside classroom teachers. They can take on a variety of roles depending on the needs of the district. More details on the Texas Two-Step program are available at angelo.edu/Texas-2-step. Senator Cornyn reports Cristoval ISD awarded $100,000 for school safety by Yantis Green. The Cristoval Independent School District was awarded $100,000 to improve school safety measures, U.S. Senator John Cornyn announced Thursday. The funding comes through the Department of Justice Office of Justice Programs, OJP, and Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services, COPS, which were recently authorized by Senator Cornyn's Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which was signed into law on June 25, 2022. This targeted legislation addresses specific concerns that have led to recent mass shootings, including the need for additional mental health services and school safety resources. No parent should fear the safety of their student when they drop them off at school, and no student should be afraid when they walk into the classroom, said Senator Cornyn. In the aftermath of the tragedy in Uvalde, I'm grateful the meaningful solutions are starting to be delivered through this funding to prevent violence, provide training to school personnel and students, and apply evidence-based threat assessments in Texas schools. Scammers targeting Tom Green County property taxpayers with fake warrant letter by Yantis Green. Scammers are targeting property owners in Tom Green County who owe taxes to the Tom Green County Appraisal District with a fake letter, and officials want to warn the public. According to information from Tax Appraisal District Chief Appraiser Tyler Johnson, a letter has been sent to property owners in San Angelo. The letter is prompting people to call and pay for their supposed delinquent tax amount. However, where this letter is coming from and how they are asking people to pay is completely inaccurate. The office just wants to inform taxpayers of the county that if they receive a letter that is not from the Tom Green County Appraisal District or Linebarger Grogan Blair and Sampson, LLP, to please call their office to confirm what it is that they actually owe. They can reach their office at 325-658-5575 or Linebogger's office at 325-655-0442. And now sports. San Angelo Central football team pumped up for showdown against Midland Legacy by Charles Bryce, published October 19th in the San Angelo Standard Times. It's going to be a 3-week sprint to the finish in the regular season for the San Angelo Central High School football team. Central improved to 5-2 overall and 2-0 in District 26A after a 57-34 win at home against Odessa High last week. The Bobcats are tied with Friendship for first place. The Bobcats will be taking on defending district champion Midland Legacy, 3-4, 1-1, at 7 p.m. Friday at Astown Broadband Stadium in Midland. Radio coverage will be on KIXY 94.7 FM. Legacy handed Odessa Permian its first loss of the season, 33-25, at Ratliff Stadium last week in the biggest matchup of the week. Central pushed its winning streak to 4 games with a lopsided win against a Broncos team that roughed up the Bobcats last year in Odessa. "I thought all 3 phases rose to the occasion, really," Central head coach Kevin Crane said. "Offense, defense, and special teams all contributed and did good things. Offensively, I thought we were pretty explosive and had some explosive plays, which obviously is good and can help contribute to wins. And I thought all 3 running backs played good too. Aiden Barron, Tyree Brawley, and Javion Robinson, all 3 contributed. All 3 of those guys bring a little something different to the table. I've been proud of those guys, and I feel like they've gotten better each week." Central quarterback Tyler Hill completed 16 of 20 passes for 196 yards and 4 touchdowns. He also had 13 carries for a team-high 123 yards and 2 scores. On the season, Hill has thrown for 1,277 yards and 13 TDs against 2 interceptions. Rushing-wise, he leads the Cats with 83 carries for 1,023 yards, 12.3-yard average, and 13 scores. It all starts with the big men up front. "The offensive line is continuing to improve, which is a good thing," Crane said. "They're going to have to continue to improve these last 3 weeks of the season. I thought our receivers were consistent, which is good. And Tyler obviously had another good game, which was good to see. Of course, there's always room for improvement. Defensively, we did some good things too," Crane said. "Obviously, the receiver that they had, 6'6" Ivan Carrion, who had 8 receptions for 205 yards and 2 TD receptions, gave us some problems. But it wasn't like we were in the wrong place. We just misplayed the ball a couple of times, and he was able to get some big plays on us." Overall, the Bobcats put forth the kind of effort they need, heading into a huge showdown against the defending 2-6A champion. "They're really good," the Bobcats coach said of the Rebels. "I know their record doesn't look like that at first glance. They're 3-4 right now. But they've played some really good football teams in non-district, including Converse Judson and Cibolo Steel. Those are some state-ranked powerhouse programs that traditionally are really good. Legacy's always got big, strong, fast players on offense, defense, special teams, and the whole deal. They've got really good players and really good coaches. It's going to be a challenge for us. But man, I think our kids are really excited for the opportunity to go over there and play Friday. They've gotten the best of us in the last 2 years, but we're just excited to go over there and have the opportunity to play." The Rebels defeated the Bobcats 69-28 last year in San Angelo. "Last year, they had an amazing football team that was really talented," Crane said. "They lost some of those guys, but I know they have 5 returners on offense and 5 on defense, so that's pretty good to have that many back on both sides of a football team that was that good last year. The offensive line is really big, 6'4", 6'5", across the board. Their quarterback, Marcos Davila, a 6'3", 200-pounder, I think has gotten 20-something Division I offers already as a junior. He had a really good summer on the camp tour. And they have three running backs that they rotate in there, and they have several receivers that they're throwing the ball to. It's not just one guy who stands out. For the year, Davila has thrown for 1,866 yards and 24 TDs. He's been picked off six times. Dionata Saunier leads the Rebels receiving corps with 560 yards and 10 TDs. Zeke Luma is Legacy's leading rusher with 764 yards and 6 TDs. The Rebels are strong on the other side of the ball as well. Defensively, they're playing well, the Central coach said. They've got size and they've got speed, the whole deal. Permians helped them a little by turning the ball over. I think the Panthers had four or five turnovers in that game. Anytime you can take the ball away four or five times, it certainly helps you. Permian helped them out a little bit, but still, Legacy's playing really good football. If the Bobcats are able to leave Midland with a win for the second time in 3 weeks, it'll give Central a huge shot of adrenaline. Anytime you can beat Legacy, it's a good thing, Crane said. It would be a good thing for our program, and it would give us some confidence moving forward. We did it several times with former head coach Brent Davis. We had some of those really good teams, and we beat them several years in a row. That was a lot of fun to be able to do that. We're going to go over there and give it our best. I know that. Lakeview Chiefs looking for a win against Big Spring to make a push for the playoffs, by Charles Bryce, published October 19th. If the Lakeview High School football team can pull off a win against Big Spring for the second straight year, the Chiefs will find themselves in the thick of a playoff chase. Lakeview dropped to 3-5 overall, 0-2 in District 2-4A Division 1, after a 60-13 loss at home against district leader Brownwood last week. Looking back on it, we thought that we did some good things, Lakeview head coach Hector Guevara said. We just didn't execute when we needed to. Obviously, they're a very talented team, but our kids play with a lot of effort and a lot of pride, and they never give up. I was proud of them. Big Spring, 4-3, 0-1, had an open date last week. The Steers dropped a 41-10 decision 2 weeks ago against Brownwood. Kickoff for the Lakeview Big Spring Showdown is scheduled for 7 p.m. at Memorial Stadium in Big Spring. Radio listeners can tune in to KWFR 101.9 FM. The Chiefs have put last week's loss behind them, and they'll try to snap a four-game losing streak with a win against a Big Spring team that they beat 49-35 at home last year. It's a good rivalry game, and I think our kids are always up for this game, Guevara said. They play very hard, and they respect the Steers. We'll go out there and compete and do our best, and hopefully toward the end of the game, we're in a position to win it. Lakeview secondary will be put to the test against the pass-happy Steers. We've really got to work on our schemes, and hopefully everybody on the field is on the same page, the Chiefs coach said. The quarterback, Gavin Padron, is really good. He distributes the ball well with all receivers. We've got to do a good job staying on our coverages and knowing where we need to be at the right time. Guevara says Big Spring has good size on both sides of the ball. Defensively, they're very aggressive, the Chiefs coach said. They do a good job coverage-wise, and our front seven is well-disciplined, and they do a good job stopping the run. The last two games of the regular season against Big Spring and Lubbock Estacado on November 4th will determine whether or not the Chiefs are able to punch their ticket to the postseason in one of the toughest 4A districts in Region 1. It's a must-win from here on out, Guevara said. We're definitely going to respect who we're playing and prepare for it. We're going to continue trying until the end. Number 2-ranked Angelo State football team hopes to stop number 15 Texas A&M Kingsville, by Charles Bryce, published October 20th. It doesn't get much bigger than this for an NCAA Division II regular season football game. Number 2 Angelo State University will face number 15 Texas A&M Kingsville in a battle of undefeated Lone Star Conference teams for homecoming at 6 p.m. Saturday at First Community Credit Federal Credit Union at LeGrand Stadium, Radio coverage will be on KWFR 101.9 FM. ASU improved to 7-0 overall and 5-0 in conference after a 52-13 blowout on the road against Western New Mexico last week. "We felt good about it," ASU head coach Jeff Gersh said. "We executed at a high level, and you kind of felt it coming on." The week before, in a 28-9 win at home against Eastern New Mexico, "We felt like we didn't play very well. It was addressed, and our guys understood. You felt it at practice last week. You kind of felt the energy up and understanding and the importance of how preparations go and how you've got to play well every week. It definitely showed on Saturday last week. Our kids were at a high level execution-wise, and they just did a great job of preparing and then watching the film. You kind of see the results of that, the product of having the right mindset and attacking things the right way." And that sets up a showdown against Kingsville, 7-0, 5-0, which is coming off a 13-10 nail-biter at home against UT Permian Basin. "It's a great opportunity for us," the Rams coach said. "Kingsville is a really good football team, man. If you win 7 games in a row, you're a good football team. We're excited about the opportunity to get them, and we're excited that it's homecoming. We're going to have a great crowd here. Getting the students out and getting the faculty and staff and the community out to support this group is important. The stage is set for a knockdown dragout at LeGrand Stadium." "It's great," senior running back Nate Omambu said. "It's a good environment, homecoming. It's two undefeated teams meeting in week 8. You couldn't ask for a better story. I know the guys we've got here. We're not worried about anything else. We're just worried about the team we've got and the work we've put in together. It's just the next week. As long as we keep that mindset and stay locked in and do what we have to do, we should handle business." Coaches sometimes worry about the distractions that homecoming week can present, but the Rams are trying to guard against that. "We limited what our guys are involved with through homecoming weekend," Gersh said. "We want them to be a part of things. It's a special time here on campus, but we limit that to what they can handle, what they can be made available for, and that part. How we explain it to everybody and our kids is that our job for homecoming is the game. That's our contribution to the homecoming weekend, is the actual football game and the performance on the field. Hopefully our guys stay locked in and focused. There's a lot going on here on campus this week, and rightfully so. It's awesome. You can see the energy on campus with it." Gersh sees similarities between the Rams and Javelinas. Offensively, they're built kind of like we are in that they want to run the football, Gersh said. That's their number one thing. They've got a couple of really good running backs. The quarterback, redshirt freshman Jacob Cavazos, just kind of makes them go. He does some great things running with it and scrambling with it and extending plays, as well as being able to throw the ball. He does some good stuff for the run-pass option and play action and things. They play with a lot of tight ends and do different stuff like that. We'll have our hands full there. ASU senior quarterback Zach Bronckhorst has completed 126 of 225 passes, 56%, for 1,734 yards and 14 touchdowns. He's thrown 5 picks. Noah Massey is the Rams' leading receiver with 27 receptions for 408 yards, 15.11 yard average, and 3 TDs. The Rams have great depth at running back, even though junior Alfred Greer is out for the rest of the season due to an injury. "The season's really going well for us," said Omambu, the number one rusher in the conference last year, who has 706 yards rushing and 6 TDs in 2022. "We're just locked in and trying to stay focused on the goal that we have on our team. We miss Alfred. He's a big part of that, and he's still a big part of it, being here every day as we go through the journey together. We're just trying to keep everybody locked in, myself included, with the task at hand, and we're just taking it one week at a time." ASU linebacker Micah Flowers leads the Rams with 45 tackles on the season. He's in graduate school now, and he's relishing his last go-around with the team. "It's so fun just being able to play with these guys," Flowers said. "I'm extremely excited for our team and our goal that we set for each other. I know we're going to accomplish it, and we're just here for the ride." Flowers had an extra year due to COVID, and he had an opportunity to get his master's degree while wrapping up his playing career. "There's a lot left on the table, so why not play another year and try to get a ring?" Flowers said. The Rams don't need any extra motivation for this week's showdown, but they try to treat each opponent the same way. "They're excited," Gersh said. "They know what's at stake in the sense of ideas of winning a conference championship and ideas of competing for a national championship. Those are different things, and this team has put itself in position to continue working toward those goals. Great football teams are teams that get up each and every week for whoever you're playing." Flowers agrees with his head coach. "They're a really good team, but we're looking forward to it," Flowers said. "We try to go 1-0 each week. Our mentality isn't going to change for that. We know what's at stake, and we know what type of team we're facing, and we just can't wait to get after it."
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.